The final case for argument this morning is Duffield Construction versus the Baldwins. For the appellant Baldwins, we have Pamela Snyder Barnes, an attorney from Rapid City. And for the appellee Duffield Construction, we have Stephen Oberg, an attorney also from Rapid City. Ms. Snyder Barnes, you may proceed.
Justice Gilbertson, may it please the court, counsel. I am here on behalf of Jerry and Karen Baldwin, the property owners and lessors in this case. The case presents the court with an opportunity to apply South Dakota Mechanics lien law or throw it out the window and jeopardize the rights of property owners and particularly lessors across the state. The case falls squarely under 4492, which involves repairs made at the instance or request of a lessee. Such repairs are an exception to the mechanics lien law. Even if the court finds that the work performed by Mr. Oberg's client, Duffield Construction, was improvements, a mechanics lien still cannot attach because the owners of the property, who were lessors, did not have notice of the work being performed on their property. This lack of notice or knowledge by the Baldwins is also fatal to the unjust enrichment claim of Duffield because there was no knowledge on the part of the owners that a benefit was being conferred to them on the property. The facts of the case involve leased property located in Rapid City. The owners of the property, the Baldwins, live in Custer. It's commercial property. Trailside, or Waco Corporation, was the lessee. The 1983 lease required the Baldwins to build a gas station convenience store structure and driveway. Trailside was to provide it with all of the fixtures, everything from freezers to shelving to gas pumps to underground storage tanks, which are at issue in this case. After the property was built, the Baldwins had absolutely no involvement whatsoever in operating or the business of Trailside in running the convenience store and the gas station. This property on Birch Avenue in Rapid City, which is across from the School of Mines, is one of five properties owned by the Baldwins and leased to Trailside in South Dakota. Trailside owns many other stores across the mountain states. The relationship between Trailside and the Baldwins in this case was that regardless of what the lease said, Trailside performed all the maintenance on all of these properties at their own expense for 20 years, 17 years with this particular property. They had a crew that traveled around to all of their facilities and did the repairs. Everything from minor things to a construction at the Sturgis store, which was very similar to this one at the Birch Avenue store in Rapid. They had to move the underground storage tanks and they had to move the gas pumps and basically reconfigure the parking lot at that store. And they did that all in-house. They did it all at their own expense. The Baldwins never even kept books on expenses for these properties because all they did was collect rent.
Was the underground storage tank placed there before this lease or did they placed it there?
And Trailside provided the tanks initially.
If I'd gone to the Pennington County Register of Deeds, what would I have found filed a record to put me on notice of the relationship between the convenience store owners and the Baldwins? Anything?
Nothing, Your Honor. The lease was not filed a record.
All right. Is that significant?
No, Your Honor, because in most situations, an owner does not have an interest to file a lease of record. It would be the lessee that would have that interest. In this case, the Duffields didn't even look for anything of record. They just dealt with Trailside, and at all times, they were dependent on Trailside to pay them in this matter. For all Duffield knew, Trailside owned the property.
Well, Duffield, if he'd gone to the Register of Deeds, would have been told Baldwin owned it.
Correct. In that case, they would have been aware that they couldn't attach a mechanics lien to the property because it was leased to Trailside.
But
they would have needed to make some additional inquiry to learn whether the work that they were going to do was authorized by the owners. Then there would have been some knowledge on the part of the Baldwins. As it is, there was no knowledge.
If a contractor had called up the abstract company and said, get me a title search on this property across the school from it's going to come back, well, I guess the Baldwins own it, and there's no liens, no leases, no nothing.
Then Duffield would know that it was not dealing with the owner of the property, and the mechanics lien issue would be raised in its mind. It would need to know that the Baldwins approved of what it was doing in order to attach the Baldwins' interest in the property.
Okay, thank you.
In 1993, Your Honors, Jerry Baldwin did transfer his interest in all of the properties to his wife, Karen Baldwin. After that, he continued to act pretty much as the owner, and for all purposes, he was the agent of Karen Baldwin with respect to these trailside properties. In early spring of 2000, one of the underground storage tanks at this Birch Avenue trailside began losing fuel. The manager of the store, when she noticed it, immediately had the remainder of the fuel pumped out, and when the gas in the other underground storage tank was completely sold, she put out of order and signs on the pumps, and Trailside quit selling gas. At that point, and in sometime in there, the Trailside stores had an underground storage tank delivered to the property, a new one, and it was sitting there on the property for a month or two, or a period of weeks. The manager was directed by Trailside higher-ups to get a contractor to replace this leaking underground storage tank. This surprised her because in all of her history with Trailside, and she'd worked there for several years, they'd always done their own maintenance work. She'd never had to go outside to get a contractor, so she looked at the yellow pages, contacted four to five contractors, and it was Duffield Construction that landed the contract. This was also surprising to Ronna Cornett, who was the regional manager for the Trailside stores. Duffield began work on the project in early June, and they completed it in August. Interestingly, the initial bid for this project was only just shy of $15,000, which is relatively minimal. It was simply for removing and replacing the tanks. There was a discussion in the bid about removing the contaminated soil on a time and materials basis, and there was also a discussion about removing and replacing the concrete above the tanks at a set rate of $1,350 per square foot.
Did they have a pretty good idea before they started the project that they had some serious soils problems, so it just wasn't going to be a quick old tank out, new tank in?
I don't know that Duffield did. There's no evidence in the record about any knowledge like that.
All right.
The fact that that initial contract was relatively low, $14,950, Duffield himself testified that was because Trailside was going to do the rest of it. They were going to complete the job. Duffield was just going to remove the tank and replace it with a new one and replace the concrete over those tanks. It wasn't until they were in the process of doing the work that there was another contract or another bid by Duffield, which was Exhibit 31, and it talked about completing the job more or less by fixing all the piping and hooking it up and all the electronics to the gas pumps. And then later on, even in the process of the project, then Duffield was asked by Trailside to give him a bid on replacing the entire parking lot. That came on late in the ball game. And replacing the contract other than above the tank, or the concrete other than above the tanks, was above and beyond what was needed to do that particular repair.
Now, Baldwin drove by the site prior to the installation of the tank and saw the tank sitting there. Why didn't he stop and tell the construction company, I'm not involved, I have no liability?
Because there was no construction activity going on at the time he saw the tank. There was no construction equipment on the place.
But he knew that construction was going to take place.
Yes, he did. His assumption, which is reasonable given a 20-year history with Trailside, was that they were going to do the work. They had at Sturgis. The Baldwins paid nothing at all for that. They weren't involved in that at all, except with regard to some sort of easement issue. Repairs, even as extensive as this, had always been done by Trailside. When Baldwin drove by the property and saw the tank, the history was such that he didn't even really think much of it. Most people would, but given the history here between the parties, he had no reason to. Trailside would take care of this.
Now, is Mr. Baldwin a licensed attorney?
Yes, he is, Your Honor.
And he knows about mechanics lien law?
I can't testify to that, Your Honor. There was no evidence of that in the record. I would assume that he had some knowledge of it. He did have a conversation with Trailside about the tank sitting on the property later on. It was incidental to another conversation, but the topic of the tank did come up, whether he asked about it or was told about it. What he was told was that, yep, the tank was leaking, yep, we got to replace it. We had to replace it. The issue has been raised as to the credibility of Mr. Baldwin because the Duffield Construction Company is saying that he's not credible, he was inconsistent in his testimony, but a review of the record will show that he was very consistent about this particular conversation. He could not remember when it took place. He did remember.
He testified during the trial it took place before the construction.
Mm-hmm. It had to have taken place before the construction because the tank was sitting there on the property. If it were in the course of or after the construction, there would be no tank there. So certainly it did have to take place before the construction took place. When he was told by Trailside that the tank had to be replaced, he didn't think anything more of it because Trailside had done similar work in the past. Not only at Sturgis, but they had fixed piping to another tank at the Valley store and piping at the Belle Fourche store as well. And again, the Baldwins never expended any money toward these projects, the Sturgis one of which was very extensive, as was this one. At no time did Trailside or Duffield contact the Baldwins about this work. At no time did Baldwins contract with Duffield. They didn't even know that Duffield existed until after the work had been completed and the mechanics lien was filed. That was the first time that the Baldwins knew about Duffield. Now, the lease in this case did not require Trailside to make any improvements to the property. The lease did authorize improvements in section 6J on page 9 of the lease, it authorized general improvements to be made by Trailside, but it didn't require them. Under the facts of this case, it's the Baldwin's contention that the trial court erred when it found that this situation didn't constitute repairs made at the instance of the lessee. Why is this important that this work be repairs as opposed to an improvement? It's because under 4492, there's an exception to the mechanics lien law for this very situation when the property is leased. Under general mechanics lien law, when someone makes improvements on the property of another, those improvements are deemed authorized because if you're a property owner and someone's doing something on your property, you're going to know about it. That's not true with leased property. A lot of lessors in this state don't have anything to do with their leased property for months or years on end. They collect the rent, and so long as the rent is coming in, they have nothing to do with the property. They don't know something's going on their property. That's why the legislature created an exception and said you can't attach a mechanics lien to property if the owner doesn't know that you've done work on the property. Duffield Construction is asking the court to find that the work done by them was improvements here to knock this situation out of this exception. The fact that the project was of significant magnitude, we do not dispute. The Baldwins can't argue about the fact that a lot of dirt was removed, a lot of fill was brought in. The contamination required this. But the issue is not whether the work constituted improvements, to which a mechanics lien can attach. The question is whether the work was repairs made at the request of a lessee. This work was a repair to a tank that initially could be considered an improvement. It was put in 17 years prior by Trailside, the lessee.
But now repairs, as I understand it, today's environmental laws require different types of tanks that were used 20 years ago. And as I see the findings in this case, there was some catch basin or there's stuff like that was on there that wasn't there before. I assume that, and tell me if I'm wrong, that they couldn't have gone in there and just welded up the hole in the tank and walked away. they had to upgrade to this. I mean, that's generally what you see around the country when these things are done. They put these new updated tanks in because of all this contamination that's been occurring.
Certainly, Justice Sinner, the new tank was better than the old one. That would be true with any replacement. It doesn't change the nature of the work from a repair to an improvement, because you are replacing a tank that was already there. You're not adding a tank to the property. And because no matter what the magnitude of the project would be, it doesn't change the nature of the property after the fact. It just replaces what was there when the Baldwins initially leased the property to Trailside. The fact that the work might have been mandatory also does not transform the work that Duffield performed from a repair to an improvement. In South Dakota, the lessee does not become the agent of the lessor for improvements on the property unless the lease requires the lessee to make particular improvements. And this is under Thorson versus Maxwell Hardware, which is on all fours with this case. An agency only arises when the lease requires it. This lease did not require Trailside to make improvements. It authorized improvements. As far as maintenance of the property, Trailside always did the maintenance. They did it at their own expense, and they did it over a history of 20 years. This case is not about an agency, and it's not about improvements. It's about repairs. It falls squarely within 4492, and the analysis can end there. If the court does determine that the work performed by Duffield was improvements, the mechanics lien still cannot attach because of the knowledge issue. The evidence is uncontroverted that Jerry Baldwin had no knowledge whatsoever that Duffield was on its property performing work.
Well, that's not what the trial court found, though. The trial court found otherwise based on the totality of all the evidence in the record.
The trial court found that Mr. Baldwin should have known that Duffield was performing work by virtue of the fact that the tank was sitting on the property. But under the facts of this case and the relationship of the parties, the fact that the tank was sitting on the property and the conversation did not give rise at all to any knowledge by Baldwin that Trailside, as an aberration from what it had always done, was going to hire somebody, a contractor, to do this work. That's what makes this case unique and not a good one for extending the law.
Did Baldwin ever seek to find out if Trailside was doing the work on their own or if they were hiring a contractor?
I thought about that, Your Honor. Why didn't he? He talked to Trailside. That's why. He talked to Trailside, he saw the tank, and nothing gave rise to any additional inquiry on his part. Trailside basically told him, we're taking care of it, like they always had. The history was
important.
And they
did take care of it. They just didn't pay their bill.
Exactly.
And that's why the mechanics lien applies.
It can't apply because there's no privity of contract between Duffield and the owners of the property. That goes to the unjust enrichment claim as well. You got to have knowledge by a party that a benefit is being conferred on them. Knowledge is one of the elements of unjust enrichment, the first one of which is a benefit being conferred, the second is knowledge and acceptance of the benefit, and the third is a failure to pay. South Dakota law clearly requires privity of contract because what it's really requiring is notice, knowledge that you're receiving a benefit. That's one of the elements of unjust enrichment. Apart from this knowledge, you don't have any meeting of the minds between the contractor and the owner of the property. You have somebody in between with whom this contractor is contracting. Now, under 44949, the legislature did allow lien claimants to make a claim for unjust enrichment against the party with whom they had contracted. And specifically, it says that no failure to comply with the mechanics lien laws will prevent a claimant from bringing just a civil action against the party with whom he contracted. Duffield did not contract with the Baldwins in this case. He didn't even know they existed. He at all times relied on Trailside for payment. That they went bankrupt is incredibly unfortunate, but Duffield is not without remedies against Trailside. They have filed a claim in the bankruptcy, and the claim before the Petroleum Release Control Fund, which is a state fund for compensating individuals for cleaning up contamination from underground storage tanks, that remains pending. Duffield is not without remedy in this case. It would be inequitable if we're considering the remedies with regard to the unjust, or the equities with regard to the unjust enrichment claim, to make an absent lessor liable for the work performed by Duffield. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Ober, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice Gilbertson, members of the court, counsel. May it please the court. My name is Steve Oberg, and I have throughout these proceedings represented Duffield Construction, Inc., the plaintiff and the appellee in this matter. The argument has been made by the appellants that this was not an improvement, and we disagree, as did the trial court. In our appellate brief, we cited for the court the chapter of the administrative regulations that deal with underground storage tanks. If you look at the source notes to those regulations were enacted after this station was originally constructed, came into effect in 1987. Those regulations deal with existing underground storage tanks, those that existed at the time those regulations were enacted, as well as new underground storage tanks. They deal with everything from cathodically protected tanks to prevent corrosion, to tightness testing, to engineering testing. They differentiate between repairs and upgrades. They define upgrades in the regulations. This was clearly an upgrade. It was a mandatory corrective action and a mandatory upgrade. That's why the engineering firm had to be hired by Duffield to do the tightness testing and oversee the project. This was a state this project was completed with state oversight. The regulations deal with putting in cathodically protected piping, not just the underground storage tanks, but this was designed to bring this property up into compliance with the law. All underground storage tanks, according to the administrative rules, were to be upgraded by December 22, 1998. This property, there's no evidence that it was ever upgraded. This project needed to be done whether or not there was a leak or not. Secondly, this project met the definition of improvement as given by this court in New Era Mining Company versus Dakota Placers, Inc. Something done to or put on the land of another. Something an occupant cannot take, remove, or carry away, all as distinguished from ordinary repairs made to meet usual wear and tear of the premises, or changes that merely gratify the taste and contribute to the convenience of the occupant. Mr. Baldwin himself referred to this work as an improvement the day after the notice of lien was filed, when he wrote in the November 15, 2000 letter, just months after this project was completed, and said, in reference to this work, my wife and I did not authorize this work to be done. Did Baldwins have notice or knowledge that improvements were being made to their property? The trial court found yes, and we submit that the evidence, substantial evidence in the record, supports that finding, which is the standard that this court gave in Thorson versus Maxwell Hardware. Jerry Baldwin drove by the property, saw this brand new underground storage tank sitting on the property. And in the exhibits that were offered into evidence, you can see before the work began the tank that he saw. It's a large underground storage tank. He claimed that he wasn't concerned. When the trial judge from the bench asked him, well, did you give any thought to the potential liability that you had for contaminating neighboring property owners or anything like that? This sits right across from the School of Mines. Mr. Baldwin said, I just never really thought about that. For all I knew, they may simply be upgrading their tanks. He said he wasn't concerned, but he went home and he talked with his wife about what he had seen. He not only talked to his wife, but he talked to their lessee about the project that was going to be done. And in their summary judgment motion in this case, they adamantly and vehemently said that that conversation with their lessee took place long after completion of the project. They said it in their summary judgment brief. They said it one day before we tried the case in response to my trial brief. They accused Duffield of misrepresenting the facts on that important issue. And at trial, Mr. Baldwin admitted that his conversation probably occurred before the work began. If we look at the letter that Mr. Baldwin wrote on November 15, 2000, the day after we'd filed our notice of intent to claim the lien, Mr. Baldwin said, "We were not even aware that this contract had been let or that this work had been done until after it was almost completed." I don't know if he was referring to the work being done or when he acquired knowledge of the work being done, but clearly, or when the contract was let, but clearly he makes reference to knowing that the contract was let before the work was completed. That is what the Supreme Court has said.
Excuse me, so by that, what you're saying is that the evidence indicates that he knew that somebody other than Trailside was going to do this?
That's what I would submit, Justice Meyer Henry, that's what that letter suggests. I should, though, point out to the Supreme Court that I did not make this letter an exhibit before the trial judge. I made this an exhibit, or I put this before the trial court in connection with the attorney's fees issue. It was made part of the record before the findings of fact and conclusions of law were entered in the case. I believe I submitted this February 26, 2003. Findings of fact were entered in March of 2003 and made nunk-pro-tunk to February 28th.
You know, with respect to his knowledge, how do you tie, and how did the trial, I didn't see in the findings how the trial court tied the second contract with regard to paving to Mr. Baldwin's knowledge.
I don't think that was made an issue in the trial, Your Honor. I don't recall any testimony about that. On appeal now, they have said, well, how could Jerry Baldwin have known about the additional work that was done? There was three estimates. One, I think, was May 26, 2000. The second was June 15, 2000. And then I think a third a week later that involved replacing all the concrete. Well, what happened was Duffield didn't know the extent of the contamination. No one would until you open it up and start digging when he first submitted his bid. If you look at the June 15th bid, and then you compare that to the South Dakota administrative rules that govern the installation of underground piping and underground tanks, you can see why those bids were done. When you open this hole up and you realize, when Duffield realizes, this is what it's going to take. It's going to take an engineer to tightness test. It's going to take cathodically protected piping. All of this work. His second bid, June 15th, parallels those regulations, I submit. So the concrete, when you take all of that and you have to remove all the piping to the pump islands and everything else, that's a lot of concrete. You can look at the photographs that were offered in this case, and you look in front of this station, the two tanks that had to come out, you can see the caps, the fill caps, where they were filled, the old tanks. And you can see the size of the new tank that had to go in. Then you extend out from those tanks the piping that goes underneath the concrete pump islands. There's a lot of concrete that's going to come out of this place just to do the upgrades and the replacement of the tank.
And this is what Baldwin could have seen? Is that what you're saying?
I think Baldwin, he was there when the station was originally built. He would have known how those tanks went in. He owns five of these stores. He would have seen the size of this tank as he drove by at minimum.
So what you're saying is the distance between the tank and the pumps, by just having the knowledge of the land and the layout, would be a significant part of the pavement that needed to be replaced?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And I think that when you look at the photographs, the pre-work photographs of the condition of the property, even though Mr. Baldwin said he wasn't particularly aware of the condition of the concrete, you can see it's star-cracked like a spider web before Duffield began the project. There was substantial evidence to support the trial court's finding that the Baldwins knew of the improvement to their property. Secondly, even if this project were characterized as a repair, and I don't think it was, it was not made by or at the instance of the lessee. This was mandatory work mandated by the state of South Dakota mandatory corrective action and upgrades pursuant to the administrative rules that didn't exist when the station was originally built.
Does that go to the property owner or to the to Trailside, the lessee?
Does what?
Does that mandatory requirement go to the property owner or to the lessee?
It just says, the regulations say that if you're going to have an underground storage tank, you either have to comply with these regulations or you have to close the tank. I think Trailside, as the operator of the tank, would have had to comply, certainly. But secondly, if we get into the lease, we look at the lease. The lease said that the Baldwins themselves were going to be obligated to make repairs. The only maintenance obligation that Trailside had was to the interior of the premises and to the driveways. And I asked Mr. Baldwin about what was meant by driveways. He said the driveways were where you didn't have sidewalks. If you look at the photographs of the property, there was a sidewalk that went along St. Joe towards the School of Mines, along Birch, which is a north and south road, and along Main Street, which is the east-west road. There was a driveway on Main, two driveways on Birch, and one driveway on St. Joe. Everywhere else there was sidewalks, but it's real small areas. He said what was meant by driveways was the area where there wasn't sidewalks. There's no indication that that driveways meant the entire concrete parking lot. And in fact, Trailside was not obligated to remedy ordinary wear and tear. After 17 years of use, this entire parking lot needed to be put in new. It was completely shot. Baldwin's even contemplated that additional regulations may require that they expend funds at this station. If you look at the lease, Section 3, the lessors were to furnish and keep in effect at their sole cost and expense all permits and licenses necessary to enable the lessee to operate a store with motor fuels upon the leased premises. If the lessee required further facilities, equipment, or additional changes to the plans or specs, and in the event that the lessor's costs exceeded $120,000, there was even a provision for that. In that instance, the tenant, the lessee, would have to pay an additional sum of 1% per month of the cost of such changes, additions, or excess costs. This wasn't a repair made by or at the instance of a lessee within the contemplation of 44.9-2. We submit that the evidence was sufficient to find that Mr. and Mrs. Baldwin had knowledge of an improvement being made on their property. To implicate their duty to post notice or give specific notice to anyone that may be involved in improving their property.
Council, let me move you on to a different area for a second. In addition to the action on the mechanics lien, you also brought a contract action or an unjust enrichment action seeking personal judgment beyond the mechanics lien provisions. Is the mechanics lien insufficient to cover the total cost of repairs and fees?
No, Your Honor. If this court affirms the mechanics lien, the trial judge on the mechanics lien, I think that is sufficient. However, there is also the claim of unjust enrichment, and under Action Mechanical, which this court decided, I believe that contractual privity is not necessary to make a claim of unjust enrichment. This court has talked about a claim of unjust enrichment in terms of an implied contract, where it's equitable to find an implied contract. If there was actually contractual privity, there wouldn't be any need to find an implied contract. In the Sherman case, the court indicated that where a subcontractor contracts with a general contractor and makes improvements to somebody's property and then fails to perfect his mechanics lien, equity in the form of an unjust enrichment claim will not lie. That makes sense because there is a remedy at law if the mechanics lien statutes apply. It makes sense then that if you don't take advantage of the remedy at law, that equity will not help you. In Action Mechanical, however, this court said that even though H&N failed to perfect its mechanics lien, they were still, and did not have contractual privity with the owner of the property, they were still allowed to pursue their claim for unjust enrichment. In this case, Duffield did perfect its mechanics lien, and we believe that a claim of unjust enrichment should lie, but it would not be necessary if the court affirmed on the mechanics lien.
There wasn't any real argument about this issue, though, before Action Mechanical. It's been pretty well understood that there had to be privity before unjustment and enrichment lie.
Sherman suggests that, Justice Zinner, but if we go back and we look at Ringenberg versus Wilsmeyer, which was noted in the footnote in Sherman, the court found just the opposite. In that case, the court found that the mechanics lien failed, I believe, and yet they allowed a claim of unjust enrichment in the absence of contractual privity. Now, Sherman said that Ringenberg is of limited or no precedential value because it was a 2-2 decision. I don't think that it really was a 2-2 decision. There was a two-person, there was a concurrence by Justice Woolman in which he said, I would find that the mechanics lien also, there was also substantial compliance, so the mechanics lien's good. He did not say, I disagree on the unjust enrichment. There was only one dissent on the, and that was Justice Zastrow, said, I would not find in the absence of contractual privity a claim for unjust enrichment. So I'm not sure. I think with regard to subcontractors who provide materials or labor to general contractors, I think that issue was pretty well decided. But if we look at Amert Construction Company versus Spielman, the court distinguished that case from Sherman by saying, well, we're really faced with an issue of a mechanics lien only and not an unjust enrichment claim. But the court also pointed out that in Amert Construction Company, we were not dealing with a subcontractor. The court seemed to distinguish by saying we're dealing with a general contractor who has made improvements, and we're dealing with a mechanics lien case only. So I'm not sure. In this case, it makes sense to me if a mechanics lien was unavailable to Duffield Construction Company, given all the facts and circumstances, that a claim of unjust enrichment should still lie. The claim has been made by the Baldwins that they didn't realize that they were receiving a benefit. Jerry Baldwin knew that this property was going to stay, that this upgraded tank was going to stay with the property at the end of the lease. The lease didn't say that the lessee had the right to remove the underground storage tanks. The lease did allow the lessee to remove above ground trade fixtures, the pumps, the lights, coolers, that sort of thing. But he testified that it was always contemplated and understood that the underground UST system would stay with the property.
Isn't it possible, though, that an owner of property, seeing construction being done, would simply say, well, my liability exists to the value of the property. I have no personal liability in this case under the mechanics liens law. And so he would take no further action. Where in this case, or in some case down the road, the unjust enrichment law would impose them to personal liability beyond the value of the lien.
Well, in this case, I guess it's been the appellant's position that they thought that this was a repair. Presumably, Gerald Baldwin, an experienced lawyer, knows the law. If it was his understanding and his subjective thinking that this was going to be simply a repair, and I'm not conceding that that was his subjective thinking, but if it was, as he's claimed, then he wouldn't have been concerned about a mechanics lien. He certainly wouldn't have been relying on his property to satisfy any such claims.
My concern isn't with this case because you're advising the mechanics lien takes care of it if that is affirmed. My concern is in the future case where the mechanics lien either doesn't take care of it or doesn't exist. If we expand unjust enrichment beyond privity of contract, where do we put a limit on it?
I think as with any equity case, there has to be It has to be based on the fact-specific case. You have to meet the elements. Equity is not a easily definable concept, and it has to apply to a specific set of facts. I'm just saying that in this case, I think that if there is not a remedy at law, a law that was designed to achieve equity, that equity should take over and take care of this, and that Duffield should have a remedy. I have nothing further unless the court has any questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Snyder-Barnes, you have 10 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Justice. The question here is whether or not the Baldwins can be held responsible for this. There is a difference between subcontractors who do work for a general contractor on a property and a subcontractor or a contractor that does work for a lessee of property. And the Union Trust case, that old 1912 case that's come up in this matter, has a great quote to address this very issue. No analogy can be maintained between the case of a contractor who is supposed to possess implied authority to bind the property of the owner to the extent of subjecting it to a lien imposed by law in favor of subcontractors and material men, and that of a tenant or lessee who has no such authority. In the one case, the relation warrants the inference of authority. In the other, no authority is implied. The extent of the power or authority of the lessee is to bind such interest, the lessee's interest, and such only as he possesses in the property. Unless an actual agency is established, the interest of the lessee alone is chargeable. Your Honors, every case cited in support of Duffield's claim against the Baldwins involves a lease that requires requires improvements to be made, and in those cases, Action Mechanical, Amert, the lessors were on the premises on a regular basis and were fully aware of what was going on. That's not true in this case. The Baldwins live in Custer, the property's in Rapid. The testimony was uncontroverted that Jerry Baldwin didn't know. Whatever he should have known, he didn't know. Yes, he's a lawyer, but he's not obviously sophisticated about these matters. Most people would be very concerned that he let it go after a conversation with Trailside indicates that he truly was not concerned. With regard to the amount of the mechanics lien, Judge Tucker, the mechanics lien was for the entire contract amount. Under 4496, the mechanics lien is for the contract amount when you have a contract between the lien claimant and the property owner. And if apart from a contract, it's for the value of the services. Duffield testified that they testified that the construction company, Duffield, paid third parties about $65,000. They also incurred about $23,000 in internal costs. So the actual value of their services was $88,000, not $182,000 minus the $20,000 that Trailside paid. So I did want to address that for you.
And you're not counting the value of their, of Duffield's. You're just counting what the Duffield paid others, but you're not counting the value of the work they put into it.
They did not present any evidence on that, Your Honor. They simply detailed the labor costs, their benefits costs. They didn't include that for themselves, unfortunately. As far as the lease goes and the maintenance, and as far as the agency of the lessee Trailside in this case to contract with Duffield and then bind the lessor, you don't have it. The lease doesn't, it not only doesn't require improvements, it's a mixed bag on the maintenance issue. Overall, the Baldwins were to maintain, but in section 6 of the lease, I believe it was 6E, Trailside was to maintain the inside of the building and the driveway. This was Trailside's thing. Baldwins were to maintain the exterior of the premises, which presumably could include the driveway. But Trailside had always done all the maintenance. The driveway was explicitly put in their column as far as maintenance under the lease. And the fact is, Trailside let the driveway go. over a 17-year history. They didn't maintain it to the point where it got to that extent. It was in bad shape. The fact that it was in such bad shape made it such that they decided, rather than just to try to repair it, they replaced it completely. That was their choice. And again, under the history of the relationship between these parties, Gerald Baldwin had no reason to know about that or the replacement of the underground storage tank, because Trailside had always done it, even to the extent of a project of this magnitude. The fact that the law might have required this and made it mandatory, again, that goes to the agency issue. Did that make the lessee the agent of the Baldwins for performing this work? No, it did not. Apart from the leak, Trailside had done nothing about this tank, obviously, and I have not researched the law or presented it to the court on this issue. They had done nothing about this tank until the leak happened. So obviously there was no affirmative obligation on them or the Baldwins at this point in time, or no authorities presented in this case that they had some obligation to fix it proactively as opposed to in response to a leak. The trial court's findings as far as knowledge of Mr. Baldwin as to the work of Duffield went more to the fact that he should have known. He felt that because he drove by and saw the tank, and because of the magnitude of this project, he should have known. There's no evidence to support that in the record. The evidence is that he did not know.
Well, the trial court's exact language, and I'm paraphrasing from memory now, as I recall the findings, the trial court said something to the effect that Baldwin's claim of no knowledge is not credible. Isn't that the way the trial court found?
The trial court made that finding with reference to the award of attorney's fees, not in the in the findings and facts and conclusions of law with relation to the actual judgment on the mechanics lien. In addition, Your Honor, in its initial memorandum decision in the case, the judge made no statement whatsoever about the credibility of Gerald Baldwin. It was only in the findings of facts and conclusions of law, and those were accepted in toto by, they were the plaintiff's findings and conclusions.
But they control over the memorandum opinion. Our established authority clearly says that.
Yes, Your Honor, but the judge's initial take on the issue was that he didn't find it significant enough to even mention it in his memorandum decision. If you look at the memorandum decision and his findings, it's clear that what Judge Johnson believed was that Gerald Baldwin should have known.
He doesn't really say that, though, does he, in his findings of fact and conclusions of law? I was trying to find that language in there, and all I've found is that he concluded, or he found as a fact, that he did know.
Is there a finding that you can point to where he uses the word should have known?
I may be just missing it.
I was referring to finding 63.
Perhaps it's in the memorandum decision. There was a finding that was very specific where he said he should have known when he drove by. Here it is. It's in the memorandum decision on page 6. The judge stated that the Baldwins had knowledge when Baldwin saw the new underground tank on top of the ground. It should have been obvious, should have been, to him that the concrete would be demolished, old tanks would be removed and replaced, and the new concrete would be poured over the affected area. As an experienced real property owner and an experienced attorney, Baldwin should have been concerned that he had a leaking gas tank on his property, which could expose him to liability. Baldwin's failed to inquire and failed to post any notice of non-liability. Had he inquired, he most certainly would have learned. Again, should have known, would have learned, should have inquired. He did not enter a finding that he in fact knew.
Well, you know, typically the trial courts incorporate their memorandum decision into the findings of fact. I don't see that being done here.
Well, then, if it's incorporated, Your Honor, then that should have known, should have inquired language would be part of the judgment of the court.
Well, what I'm saying is I don't see it. I don't see an incorporation. Maybe it's here, but I don't see it. Do you recall?
I don't recall.
Also, conclusion of law 3 provides Gerald Baldwin had notice or knowledge of the improvements before they were completed. And his knowledge is imputed by law to Karen Baldwin.
And if you look at finding 63, Justice Center, about the finding of knowledge, again, it goes to the fact that he drove by, saw the tank, admitted that he spoke with someone from Trailside. And that's what supports the finding that he did have knowledge. 37. I believe I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We're in recess.